Samaya,
good?
I'm so happy to have you on the podcast here at Soulful Soundbites. So for those of you that don't know Samaya Hill, she's an esteemed Chicago firefighter and a subtle energy alchemist, which I can't wait for you to unravel that and help us understand what that means. But to kind of give a preview, she has a fascinating journey of resilience and self-discovery, which have really paved the way towards her own wellness path of being, after being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, filing personal bankruptcy, and a divorce, your journey has truly allowed you to move from that sense of feeling anxious and exhausted and overwhelmed to living a healthy and thriving life, which is just such an experience in itself to go through and be on the other side of that. And so from those insights from your own journey, paired with your degrees and certifications, you help hundreds of people find their own wellness path. And so I'm excited today to just talk about that journey, and particularly around those subtle energy blocks that you uncovered during your own journey and how you overcame them. So welcome.
Thank you, Erica. How are you?
I'm great. I've been looking forward to this conversation. So, you know, I have to just start with the fact that you're a firefighter. Like, it seems like such a dichotomy of being like in that masculine energy and protecting people and saving people, and also just tapping into that really subtle feminine quality of the energy body. So tell me how these worlds have met.
Well, so firefighting was just kind of this natural step. I was actually in the Army for a few years, and then I got my master's degree in kinesiology. I worked with athletes. So again, everything was very masculine. I was in charge of a human performance lab in which I made athletes better athletes. So it was all very much the masculine energy. That's where I lived. I was do. And so the fire department just kind of came along, was like, well, naturally, of course, I'm going to do that and prove myself. You know, I had something to prove. My ego was, you know, stood in the way of me ever feeling anything, ever having an emotion, ever showing an emotion. God forbid I got sad or cried ever. Like, it didn't let that happen. But it was in the moment of getting diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and a few years later having my first child, and I just wasn't feeling good. Something had to change. And through many years, okay, so this did not happen overnight or even within a year, but I did much, 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 much research. Like, when Google first kind of became a really big thing for the youngsters who are listening, like, they don't remember this time period, but there was a time when Google searching was like the thing to do. And I found all kind of fun information about, you know, our health and well-being. And I started to realize that stress was taking a toll on my body. And, you know, so I have a lot of stress. I was probably in adrenal fatigue. I was tired all the time, and numbness in my body, all kinds of things happening. But why did I get MS? And that was my biggest question. And it always comes down to, every disease and illness comes down to your emotions and your thoughts and beliefs. So your emotions shape all of that. And that comes from childhood, typically, almost always. So I'm like, okay, so I got MS basically because of stress, right? Stress will kill. But it was my emotions wrapped in that stress, or the stress was being caused by the emotions that I wasn't expressing or letting transpire out of my body. I don't want to say let go, because that's such a bad way of putting it. But understanding that my emotions were shaping my reality. And again, this happened over years. This was not like instant insight or anything. So when I was able to start moving through some of these deep, deep, deep layers of emotion, deep, that masculine side started to quiet down. And my feminine side was like, you just got to sit silent. And there was one moment I believe it was just my son that was born, maybe both, but they were very little. They're 2 years apart. And they both went down for a nap, or he went down for a nap, and I sat on the couch. I was home by myself, and I literally just sat on the couch. There was nothing else on, no TV, no radio, nothing. I crossed my legs, and I just like, and I just basked in the silence. And I was like, whoa, this is so nice. And it was like this blanket of nothing. And I was like, just being. I'm like, oh my God, like this is all right. So maybe this is kind of a form of meditation. You know, I didn't meditate at the time. So as that began to evolve and grow and shift, I realized that my masculine energy was way out of balance and my feminine was way out of balance the other way. I had to kind of merge them back together, start to make them realize that they're cohabitating the same body and not separate. And once I merged them, everything began to align.
I love that because I feel that that is a metaphor for what a lot of people are experiencing today of, you know, conforming and twisting and bending themselves into a pretzel to fit within these roles that tend to be a little lopsided, where the masculinity can even be in some cases toxic. And, you know, we need to sort of get that femininity up there to find a harmony and balance. And it sounds like for you to arrive to that insight, it was through, you know, looking at some of your emotions and your beliefs and your thoughts, and of course the stress. And the diagnosis was, you know, I'd like to say it's a gift when something tragic or traumatic like that happens, not to belittle the significance of it, because at the moment, nothing about it, I imagine, felt like a gift, but perhaps an invite to look below that. And that sounds like what you did. And so I know you've talked about, by looking underneath that, you started to look at your cycles. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So, and this is how I work. Yeah, I work with people. It's like, let's look at your cycles. So I like to give the example of driving, because everyone pretty much drives. So if you're driving, and you know, some people like to do nothing in their car and just cruise along. Other people, and everyone sees this, and maybe this is you, because this was me at one point, driving really fast. And like, you have somewhere to get. And honestly, now it doesn't matter. I mean, at least in Chicago, you know, it's like you could zoom as fast as you want. It might save you 30 seconds. So, you know, these people that are really aggressive drivers and just like angry, aggressive drivers. So maybe you're driving along and minding your own business and someone cuts you off. And your reaction to that, are you angry? Are you hitting your horn? Are you giving them the bird? Are you saying whatever? Are you like, oh my God, what did I do? Are you afraid? And because driving will give you a lot of insight into who you really are, into who your real, what your real reactions are to a lot of scenarios, not all, but a lot of scenarios. So if your reaction is to get angry, to get frustrated, to like, what's wrong with people? It's a really good reflection of you, just as all experiences are. But driving is a really easy one, because your initial reaction is typically what you really feel. And because you're in the safety of your own car, typically by yourself, it's a good way to measure where you're at in life. So these cycles will continue to pop up. So let's say you get, you're in kind of a more angry, impatient driver, then you get to the store and you're in a hurry and you're waiting in line. And of course you're in the longest line, and I'm using this scenario because this was me. The impatience kicks in and you're like, ugh, and you're like, oh, now your blood starts kind of like boiling a little, and but you're not saying anything, and you're just like stomping your foot. You're shaking you don't know what to do with yourself. You're getting so angry. Now you're impatient. So now you get home and no one's helping you unload the groceries, or no one's helping you cook. So now you have to do it all by yourself, and you don't say anything because you don't want to be the bad guy, or you don't, you know, whatever your reasons for not speaking up. But now you're cooking by yourself and everyone else is just kind of sitting around watching you. And here you are, you had someone cut you off, you were impatient at the grocery store in line, and now you're cooking by yourself and you're tired, you're hungry, and you just want someone to take care of you. Those are all the cycles, and they probably happen over and over. They happen at work. Maybe, you know, your boss says something and it makes you super frustrated, or you're the boss and you're frustrated with your workers. These cycles will continue over and over, just showing up in different packages. And until you stop and see, like, oh, they're all the same thing, just decorated differently, then you can see that underlying all that might be anger. Because anger and fear are the two main emotions opposite of love. They have a lot of other emotions underneath them. So with anger, there's impatience, passive aggressive, sarcasm is a huge one. And people think like, oh, that's just, they're a jokester. No, they're actually angry. They have underlying anger. And of course, rage. So being able to kind of pick apart the puzzle, I'll say, you know, like you could see the whole thing maybe, but you're not sure, like, you know, where the pieces kind of fit together. If you could take it all apart and look at each piece and say, oh, so this is anger, this is anger, this is anger. Maybe I have some underlying anger issues, and where is that coming from?
Right.
And almost guaranteed it's coming from childhood.
So this is super fascinating, because I find that even parenting can be a cycle that can give you insights. I mean, in hearing everything you've said of the different cycles and looking at them with almost like an outsider lens of how you respond to situations is very telling of what's happening internally within, you know, what that looks like. So how do you work with someone then when they start to notice like, oh, I am impatient? Because that always doesn't tie to a strong rooted feeling. So they're like, Samaya, I'm super impatient. I've looked at all my cycles. I just get annoyed. There's so much to do, so little time. Now what?
Right. Yeah.
That might be coming from some part of me from yesterday or many years ago.
So I'll give you my example, because I'm open. I'm an open book. I my kids were probably 5 and 7 or 6 and 8, and they were in a private school. And of course, we're running late. And my daughter is one of those that just, she like stops the smells of roses with everything. She's just slower. She just really looks at things. She's not never in a hurry. And here she is. She's just learning to tie her shoes. So it's slow. And then she's got to keep starting over. And I'm standing at the door, keys in my hand. And I'm like, Sophia, let's go. You know, like real like snarky, not yelling, but like, we are going to be late. You know, like, oh. And then all of a sudden I heard my mom. I was like, oh. So one, it was a learned behavior to be impatient and always moving quickly. But two, I got to see kind of where it's coming from. So I remember as a child always being rushed around everywhere. Everything was always a hurry, a hurry, a hurry. So sometimes it's your thing. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's learned, and sometimes it's something that it was an incident that occurred that created this belief that I have to hurry and I have to be impatient. So I had to then go, okay, so if that was learned and I kept dragging it forward, I had to go, where have I seen this show up in my entire life? And it was like everywhere. So if you're a fast driver, you're impatient, like you're always in a hurry to get somewhere. So, okay, why are you always in a hurry? Is it because you don't like where your life is going, so you're trying to get somewhere else? Is it because you are looking to escape something, so you're just running away from something? You have to start to analyze, what is it I'm running to or from in such a hurry? And it's typically one or the other. You're typically trying to find something else that you find more satisfying, which isn't going to happen if you're not aware, or you're running from something, which is like situations, experiences that you're just so tired of dealing with. You know, like people are late for work. Why? Because they don't want to go to work. Most people don't want to go to work. So now they're late and they're rushing.
Yes.
So you're angry about your work situation. You're angry with your kids because you feel like maybe it makes you look like a bad parent, or it's putting you out of your schedule, which you, that's your schedule, not their schedule. Or, you know, I always say, what's the worst that can happen if you're late? What's the worst that can happen? So as I started to unpackage all this with this scenario, it was like, you know, it was eye opening for me. And this is like 10 years ago now. But like, okay, so what is the worst that will happen if we're late for school? Well, I walk them in. Okay, then what? Then that's pretty much it. There's going to be like, oh, don't be late again. Okay, that's it. Nothing bad yes. happens, you know, the world's not going to end. So I think sometimes we put these labels on that create scenarios out to be bigger than they really are. We often come up with worst case scenarios. We come up with the doom and gloom instead of seeing like everything's perfect as it is. And if this scenario keeps happening over and over again, then there's something you're not looking at. It's just the universe's way of saying, hey, yo, over here. I'm bringing it to you again. I'm bringing it to you again because yes. it's not going to come with words.
You know, that's so, you know, I love what you're saying here, and what, just to echo the things that are really bubbling up for me is when you start to see those patterns and or cycles, as you described, when you can tease them, even through just your own self-discovery, or, you know, if someone has that and working with you to help, you know, well, what would happen if that, is this a label or is this really something I believe, you know, or is this an inherited behavior or is this, you know, a unique behavior? And so I feel like that is really important to start to give you some direction of where to go, especially if there's something at the physical level and you know that it's stress related and you start to kind of go below. And then I'm wondering how, I know that once you began to recognize some of those emotions and feelings by teasing out those cycles and patterns, you were able to connect that to at an energetic level. And I know you've gotten very familiar with Chinese medicine and how they relate to organs. And so can you just bring us down even a level below of how that works at that subtle energetic level?
Sure. So this is difficult, the difficult part, because I'm not a quantum physicist, but I love quantum physics. So I will say that, you know, we're all, everything's energy. We're all energetic beings. And if we were to use particles to pick apart a human, you know, we'd go to the organ level, then the cellular level, the molecular level. But if we kept picking it apart, it would be into black, dark matter, which is nothing. So we all have this essence about us. And the essence is very hard scientifically to prove. It is proven somewhat. Chakras are scientifically proven and energy fields and everything. But our essence, our vital force is really difficult to prove, but it has to be part of us. So when we think about our bodies as more than just physical and more than just mental and more than just emotional, we have this energetic field around us. Some people call it aura. There's different names. That's all energy. It's just frequency. As an example, to kind of bring this more down to the base level here, if you've ever walked into a room and the hairs on the back of your neck stood up or on your arm and like, and you had no idea why, there was no reason. Your hair is actually an antenna, which is why you're not supposed to shave or cut your hair. But the hairs are the little tiny hairs, even the ones on your face, they're little antennas to detect the energies outside of your physical body. They bring it into your cells, into your meridians, into your chakras, so that you can actually experience something and instinctually or subconsciously know what that energy feels like. And you'll know, like, ooh, is this bad? Is this good? You know, when you kind of like your heart flutters, when you meet someone you love for the first time, it's like that you can't describe it, but it's this feeling. So taking that into account, when we understand that those energies out there move at the speed of light, probably faster, they're moving very quickly. But when they hit the physical body, they slow way down. We are so dense. And so when we understand where our emotions are lying in our body, so anger, for example, lies in the liver and gallbladder. So if you have bouts of constipation, diarrhea, you like salty, crunchy foods or alcohol, that's the liver asking for more food, feed me. It becomes very dense. And so the emotions, when they are allowed to fester, they fester in specific organs and they grow, and the then physical organ will take on that emotion and become imbalanced and denser. But it's very hard to move it out because it's already now in the physical body. And then fear is the bladder and kidneys. So if you have bathroom issues, sexual issues, that's all fear related. I'm not sure if I answered your question because I went on a bit of a tangent.
It's super helpful. And I'm wondering, so if one wasn't into trying like traditional Chinese medicine or in the sense of laying on a table for acupuncture, what's another way that you could offer them to kind of invite them to think of emotions taking root in an organ within your body and trying to then energetically harmonize that imbalance? Like, what are some practical ways?
Yeah. I mean, always breath work, because you will feel what that feels like. One exercise that's really interesting, it was hard for me in the beginning, is if you look at yourself in the mirror and really look at your eyes and say, I love you. For most people, majority of people, this is really difficult. It's like one of the most difficult tasks you could do, because most people, they won't say it out loud. They'll look away. But really look at yourself in the eyes in the mirror and say, I love you, and mean it. And if it doesn't feel good, like you say it and you're like, you want to cringe, where do you feel that in your body? That's probably a lot where your stress is held. You know, you might feel a tightness in your solar plexus, which is like at your bottom of your rib cage. You might feel an ache in the back and your shoulders. They might tense up. You know, your head might feel heavy and like you're going to get a headache. So that is a good gauge, just kind of like a non-scientific gauge.
Something. I love that. That is so good. I love the breath work. And there's just so much there. And I know a lot of people have talked about that, but the looking and saying, I love you, I never had heard of that before, but can totally feel like how powerful that can be.
Yeah. And when you can get it to the point when you can look yourself in the eye and mean it and say, I love you to yourself, you're doing great. Cause I mean, I'm going to take a guess, like 95% of society can't do that. It's very difficult for them. Because when they look at themselves in the mirror, they see everything. And most people don't love themselves. And that's a lot of where my work stems from, is, you know, you have to love yourself first. And if you don't love yourself first, it is impossible to love anyone else. And, you know, parents fight me on that one all the time. I'm like, listen, I know you say you love your kids, but do you unconditionally love your children? You know, if they did something or, you know, love someone that you didn't approve of, how are you going to feel? Or if they wronged you in some way, are you still going to love them? So really loving somebody means you love yourself first.
Yes.
Because to know what that feels like, you have to embody it. And there's no workaround for that.
Right. And I feel like oftentimes if someone's struggling with that, in addition to stress that could be getting in the way, they may have a really strong inner critic. And I know that you were so kind to offer our listeners an inner critic voice or an inner voice scan. And can you tell us what that is? Cause I'm just so curious. I'm like, me too. I want to try this.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course you can. So I do a free one-time scan. This is the device here. It's just an Android phone turned into a device. And it's called an AO scan, and it will measure your frequencies, and it measures all kinds of frequencies. The scan I'm doing for free is called the inner voice scan. So you send me some information and a 12-second voice clip. There's more specifics to it, but you send me a 12-second voice clip. It'll analyze 6,000 notes in your voice, and it will let you know, based on your voice, what emotions are affecting your physical body and where in your physical body, and then give you suggestions for balancing out, plus the balancing harmonics to listen to balance you out, because everything is frequency. It's like let's say you want to listen to a radio station, 96.9, and you're at 70.1. It's almost there, but not quite. And all you're going to get is static. So what the frequency scanner does is it just brings that back into balance more. I mean, it's up to you to maintain this. You know, you do everything you can to maintain you, but this scanner has literally been a lifesaver for me, my family, and so many other people. It will also, other scans will measure every organ in your body, your eyes, your back, your skin, your mitochondria, your meridians, your chakras, your every part of you, your blood, all of it. And we'll let you know what's out of balance, even food sensitivities. And it will give you complete readout of what's going on at the moment. And we'll send frequencies for confidence or for weight loss or for cancer help or for your pets, for your plants, for your house. So it's whatever.
Samaya, that's so generous of you. And I'm so intrigued by this. So I will absolutely be reaching out to you for this. And, you know, just to add one thought on that before we wrap up here is, you know, I love everything you said, and it's just really resonates true to what I know. And I love the way that you express it. And through this, you know, inner voice scan, not only does it do everything you said, but just the energy that we have or the imbalances we have is what radiates outward. So, you know, if there's an imbalance and you're feeling angry, like this goes to the point of what you had said, if someone walked into my room right now and I was feeling angry, they could sense that. That could be the hair that rises up for them. So this is such a beautiful gift to offer people because it doesn't only impact them, it impacts those that are around them. And so that's just so, so beautiful. And so I'd like to wrap up by asking you, what is something you would tell the younger Samaya to help her start looking at those subtle energetic bodies sooner in her life?
At this point in my life, I would say to continue expressing or moving down the path that works for me. I ended up doing what everyone else wanted me to do. And, you know, everything's a gift. I don't regret it. However, it led me to my MS. So I would say, you know, just be yourself. You know, I was really uncomfortable in my own skin for way too long till I was like 42. Just be comfortable in your own skin. Everyone's unique and you don't have to be everything for everyone. You just have to be the right person for yourself. And yeah, let her know you're perfect just as you are.
Yes. Yes. And you are perfect just the way you are. And I'm so happy to have you here. And I can't wait. Maybe I'll have a part two after I do this, able to experience your inner voice scan. Then we can come back and talk about like, oh my gosh, what was that like? And all that is shown to me through that. So thank you for being here. And thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much.